Hello, ladies, gentlemen, and all of my friends off the binary. Welcome to the return of Mars Needs Podcasts.
I hope that wasn't too loud.
It's fine. I am JJ Hawkins, and with me this week is...
Elizabeth.
Yeah. Hey, Elizabeth. Okay, so a couple things right off the bat. We are recording with a different kind of mic. So I don't know. This is the second time I've used them. They're a set of wireless mics I bought. I'm not exactly sure what they sound like, what they do yet. So we are playing. The other episode I recorded with these mics were, it was like a year ago. I recorded an episode with Jason. It will be coming out. I am determined to put that episode out. Jason and I had a good time. I don't think we talk about anything topical.
Oh, wow.
You're not particularly topical, I know. I have always
believed... Nothing relevant.
Nothing relevant, yes. I have always believed that that podcasts are very much of their moment. Like, unless you're doing something like... Jay and Miles Explain the X-Men. So, also, just so you can see... this one's me, that one's you.
Mine's so still moving, so it's like, what am I doing? Is that my heart?
I think there's some background noise. The fan might be picking up, I don't know. I'll try to take some of that out if we hear it.
Okay.
Sorry, mic talk. But unless you're doing something like a critique of something, like, you know, I understand why you would want Jay and Miles Explain the X-Men. I am noticing, though, because the way your robe's hitting, your mic is dead up against your skin, so I don't know if that's going to... We're playing. They're brand new.
I'm sorry.
No, don't be sorry. I
will try to slow my heart and respiration.
unless you're doing something like that where you're studying something, then I can understand going back, but if it's just a Talking Heads podcast, I don't understand why you would... why you would go back.
Yeah. I mean, you probably do talk about movies and stuff, but you'll find out. It's like opening a vault because you haven't listened to it in a year.
Yeah.
Time capsule, rather.
Well, and since you have mentioned that, let's go ahead and I will go ahead and say this right off the bat, too. I am a union member. I am not a member of SAG-AFTRA. I am a member of Amalgamated Transit Union, Local 757. So what that means to me is that I respect picket lines. That is one thing that is, I think, foundational to any union member, that you respect. When other people are striking, you respect and support the strike, that mm-hmm. the withholding of labor is one of the most powerful tools we have. And
it's the most powerful tool that a worker has.
Yes. And so because of that, I have decided for at least this show, they have asked, SAG-AFTRA has asked their union members not to discuss projects that are from struck companies, either current or past. And although I am not SAG-AFTRA, I am respecting their boundaries. So although there are definitely movies and television programs out there right now that I would like to discuss, I'm going to wait until after the strike to do so, just because I should say we, because Elizabeth is here, and she is also a very proud union sibling, and we very much are pro-union in this household, and absolutely 100%. Don't want to do anything that that weakens labor, ever. So there we are. So
solidarity.
Always. So I wanted to I have had an ache to come back and record for quite some time. Life and other things have kind of kept me away from it for a while, I don't know how much of this I have talked about, because I, honestly, what happens is Jason and I will record an episode, I'd put it out or I wouldn't, and I feel like we've talked about stuff a bazillion times, and I don't know what is out there and being heard and what isn't being out there and heard. I have zero clue, but the fact of the matter is, to put things in as pretty a bow as possible, I sort of reached ahead with some mental health issues. Recording the podcast was something that was causing me a lot of anxiety. So even when we recorded it, the process of getting it out was causing me a lot of anxiety. So what would happen is I'd record it, because that was what I had the bandwidth to do. And then I would run out of bandwidth, and it would sit there on the computer.
It would molder in the can.
It would molder in the can, but knowing it was there was a constant source of stress, because it was a reminder of how I was failing.
Not failing, just, you know, not finishing.
Yeah, but when we're talking about how my brain was processing it.
Of course, excuse me, respect.
No, I mean, and I appreciate the kindness there, but it felt like failure to me. And so then I would then, rather than work on that one, because again, like, as I already said, I feel that they are transitory and would have a hard time. And they would just, they'd sit there. In fact, I have been talking about doing this, trying to come back again, for about a year. And basically what happened, I mean, we're recording this at about 10 o'clock?
It's almost 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
It's 9:45.
So I had been talking to Elizabeth. We were watching our neighbor's bunny. And so as we were talking, we hit a subject Poppy. That seemed like a, yes, Poppy.
Poppy is a sweet.
So we hit a topic that seemed like, it seemed like a cool thing to hit on. And I'm now thinking it's kind of funny what we were talking about. It's maybe a weird way to come back. Like, you haven't heard from us a while. So what do you want to talk about? You know, let's talk about death and graveyards.
Get sad and stuff.
Yeah. Let's get sad and stuff. But what happened is, so we touched upon...
our graveyards, which is a little different.
It is a little different. But to some extent, I know that for me, discussing how I feel about graveyards is kind of touch on that.
Oh yeah, I mean, it's part of the death industry.
Yeah,
as I mean, I hate that term, but like, it is part of that whole, it's one step. It's at least one step, because you got to get buried and then people visit you.
So, and this
not kind of, to get ahead of the story.
No, but that does kind of bring us back to, you know, I was saying I have sort of weird feelings about all of this, and or I used to have really weird feelings about all of this. I feel it's, my feelings are different now, and I think part of it is having actually faced loss. Okay, I guess we go back to the beginning. The conversation started because I'll also throw out there, it's almost Elizabeth's birthday, so happy birthday to Elizabeth, and we were discussing.
Which, I wasn't thinking about my own death or anything. I was thinking of places to go.
Oh,
and I love Lone Fir Cemetery here. Yeah, you know, people are always like, oh, I'm thinking about my immortality, and I'm like, bitch, I've lived with suicidal ideation since I was 7. Mortality, schmortality.
Yeah.
That's not a birthday thing for me.
Birthday means
cake.
Yeah, no, I was about to say, I might have been thinking about mortality because it was a day ending in Y.
Yeah.
But not because of birthdays. Birthdays are actually a day where you can kind of calm that noise.
Birthdays are birth. Birthdays are like, you get to think about, I don't know. I mean, like, I respect that that may be somebody else's perspective, but that is sure as hell not where my brain goes.
No.
My brain is like, yay, birthday means I can let people for once give me things. I can let them say nice things to me yeah. without pushing back immediately. I can let them make me cake. You know, it's like I can do stuff without feeling immediate guilt, or at least like telling myself not to feel immediate guilt. I'm like, shut up, brain. But birthdays are a day that you can just fully grasp. I fully grasp holidays anyway. Like yeah. I'm like, no, Halloween means I eat a bucket of candy and I don't give a shit what you say, and I don't give a shit what I say, and I watch a horror movie or I watch something cutesy and Halloween-y. Like, I don't give a shit. If I want to watch the old Garfield special, leave me alone. Christmas, like, headlong. Just, you gotta go into the holidays headlong. I think the Romans had that right. Like, it's a fucking feast day.
Yeah.
We're going to dance and we're going to have, like, drunken revels if that's your thing. And you just, whatever. You pile tissue paper on the cat. And the cat loves it. And just enjoy it. And, like, lock the door and don't let anybody else in. If that's your idea of revelry. Like, yeah. Just accept the revelry.
Also, side note here.
Uh-huh.
If people have been listening to this show for years. Mm-hmm. So when we started this show, when I started the show a long time ago, we had our cat Yoshimi who passed. And then the show moved into Doc. And sadly, last winter, we lost Doc. He was
November 14th.
A beautiful, beautiful boy. But sadly,
He got sick.
And so
we had him a long time and he got sick.
If you hear any noises running around tonight, she's asleep at the moment, but our new little bundle of joy is a little kitten named Artemis.
Yeah.
She came to us, I say kitten, she's a little over a year, but, she came to us in January. She was a stray.
January 15th.
Yes. She was a stray from Atlanta, Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
And
she lived in a Dollar General parking lot.
Yep.
And reportedly. She
has completely wormed her way into both of our hearts.
She's a complete princess.
Both of our hearts.
Yes.
Okay, but again, Artemis looks past the fuck out.
She's
right
past
now.
The fuck out. She's had supper and she's like, everybody's talking and
yeah,
you know, she very much likes to be right next to people.
Yeah,
so she's right next to her people under a rocking chair, which is her favorite place to be, one of her favorite places to be. So she's like, this is great, this is community. But yeah, so we were talking about things to do for the birthday, and so of course it came to either going to the graveyard of the Columbia, which, or the graveyard of the Pacific Northwest, which is the Columbia River, or going to Lone Fir, which is a beautiful cemetery here that I went to even just recently. I've been to it multiple times, but because it's not that far from where we live, but here in Portland. But I went yesterday with a friend of mine, and it's a thing that some of us are on one side of the fence. Not that I like to divide things in half, but some of us are on one side of the fence where we're like, yeah, cemeteries are just a place you visit and have picnics and do rubbings and, like, I don't know, it's just a thing to do. And sometimes there are people that you mention that to and they're like, I can't go to graveyards, and, like, we don't completely understand each other. But, like, I respect that it upsets some people. And I respect, I mean, because it's, you know, I went walking with somebody in a, and Lonefer, actually, a couple of years ago, who, like, while we were there, just got increasingly tense, and then he said, I hate graveyards, and I was like, why did you agree to go to this? People don't always, like, feel comfortable letting other people know what they're afraid of.
And if it's the dude you're talking about, he's afraid of everything anyway.
He's afraid of everything that's true. I don't, yeah. But, but it's, you know, I think I've felt afraid in a lot of places in my life. Most of your female friends or femme-presenting friends have felt afraid in most places. I've never felt afraid in a graveyard.
Sure. Sorry, I'm looking at volume levels. I am coming across as a lot louder than you right now.
You are, and you show up on my mic a lot stronger than I show up on yours.
Well, and I think we're supposed to be a little farther apart for the mics to, but fuck that.
Well, if I pour another glass of wine, I'll sit across the room.
There's no need. like I said, I don't know how much of this I can fix in post. They'll have to adjust the fact that we're back and we're a little different. So this is also part of what started the conversation earlier. Started a bit of a conversation that we decided to continue on mic. So we haven't really had the conversation. But so you asked me if I'd been to Lonefer.
I was pretty sure you had said no.
And I had not, and you asked me if I'd ever been to a graveyard, I have and I haven't. We discussed, like, the fact that my parents, when they passed, didn't get buried. They donated their bodies.
Smart.
Your mother was buried, but there was not a graveside service.
No, the service was in... Oh, sorry, I shouldn't play with my necklace. The service was, in the funeral home, and then everybody just went away. Like, just went home from there.
And we had a friend of ours whose brother passed, and...
That was graveside.
That was graveside. That was graveside service. And so...
But it was pouring down rain. We didn't go for a walk.
That is the only time. It's funny because you know how memories remember things differently.
Yeah, because every memory is a memory of the memory before.
Right. I remember it being hot and humid. I don't remember it raining. I just remember. I remember there being a tent over the graveside, but I just remember being, like, so humid.
It was hot and humid, because it was, unfortunately passed, full stop, but it was, it was, like, we realized we were flying July 4th weekend.
Yeah.
And that, if you've never been to Mississippi, from February on, virtually, it is muggy, it is tropical, and so July is a heck of a time to be in the graveyard. I remember it being rainy because, for the dumbest reasons, I had a really great pair of heels that I wore to the funeral, and so we parked and had to climb up the hill, and it was like, it was walking on wet grass in the heels to get to the graveside. Probably too, in July, they wouldn't have had that tent over it.
Yeah.
I don't know for sure.
I
don't know for sure. I have been to exactly two funerals that were graveside. I've been to more than two funerals. I had a lot of death in my life. But, at a young age, even, but like two funerals graveside, and they both had tents, but they were both in the rain, and they were both in Mississippi. So I don't know what to tell you.
So I think,
but I'll keep telling you.
One thing that will color a little bit of the conversation going forward. And since not everybody listening to this knows us very well.
A new audience?
Maybe. Well, I mean, even if they've listened to almost 400 of these, and I've certainly blathered on about enough topics, but as far as like our
history,
spiritual history, and such, I was not raised anywhere near. Cheers.
Cheers.
We're having some wine. I was not raised anywhere near the church.
No, they kicked you out.
My mother was a Kennedy Catholic. My father, I have no idea what it was for him growing up. He never really discussed it.
Which makes me think super, like, charismatic church, Pentecostal, like, oppressive kind of farm folk in Compton community. I have no idea.
Yeah,
it just has that feel to it. Knowing your dad, he was a little anti-establishment.
My dad was pretty anti-establishment, but I also know he would talk about hating, like, the fucking snake handlers and shit.
Yes,
so,
that's what I mean. Hating them means probably he was charismatic.
Yeah, I don't know, but I also don't know what the landscape was like. So I've said this before. My father was, as Elizabeth just said, my father was born in Compton, California. He was born on a farm in Compton. And yes, when he was a young man in high school, he did run with a gang. So it is kind of fun to say that my father was in a gang in Compton. But different era. My dad was born in 37. But
he had a few people before he had you.
Yeah.
A few.
I am the product of a third marriage. Second for my mom, third for my dad. My dad was what you might call old dad.
It's a terrible term, but
it is a terrible term.
I mean, my grandfather was like, my grandfather had his kid late.
I mean, dad died when I was in my 20s. I mean, he did die early, but yeah, it's just one of those things.
My mom.
But by the time I was born, mom and dad, so mom held on to the whole idea of what Catholicism meant into that Kennedy era, that like the Catholic Church at that time was pretty progressive.
Getting progressive.
Didn't have any racial boundaries. Catholic Charities were doing good works. They still do. But
I bet they still do. I don't know for sure. I know when I was in high school, I was so thrilled to get my first paycheck. My first paying gig where I got a paycheck was from Catholic Charities, because I was tutoring another high schooler in history.
Yeah.
And because...
American history or world history?
American history, if I remember correctly. I think it was American history. I don't fully recall.
Okay.
But I was tutoring her in history. It was my friend Luan. And, I got a paycheck from Catholic Charities, and I was like, I'm official. That's nice. But I'm used to taking jobs that I got paid under the table.
Yeah, so mom would occasionally...
It's exciting if you're a high schooler.
Yes. So mom would occasionally go through these phases of taking us back to church. One of them being...
And getting disappointed in church.
Yeah, one of them being, I believe, we were living in the South. I don't remember where in the South. I don't remember if it was Louisiana or Mississippi, but at that time, mom decided that...
I bet if it was Catholic, it was Louisiana.
I'm sorry?
I bet if it was Catholic, it was Louisiana.
Yeah. But mom... decided that I needed to go through catechism.
Cataclysm.
That's what I was trying to say, cataclysm. Yeah.
And I thought that was very funny. catechism.
Sorry, I was trying to make an inappropriate joke, so my brain wandered.
Keep going.
Well, I was just saying it's catechism with a clit in the middle. But, wow. I know.
Wow.
That's where my brain went.
Wow.
So it was when I was trying to, when they were sending me to catechism classes every week, I pissed off the nun who was teaching them, and I was told that I needed to come back when I was ready to, I guess, have more faith and stop questioning.
The questions are important.
Questions are a big part of my history with religion.
Honestly, me too. Because my grandfather was an elder in the church.
And you were in a Presbyterian household.
And he was an elder in the Presbyterian church, and he encouraged those questions. And, like, I've always respected religions where the questioning was part of it, part of the religious study, like the study of the text, like approaching it as a literature, as something to deconstruct. Or to use different theoretical lenses on, that's great to me. That brings you closer to the religious text, closer to the message than not questioning it. Yeah. Like that's a repulsion. Like if you are not allowed to question it, to deconstruct it, to make it your own, to use your own lens, then it's, if you're not allowed to do that, then it's the hierarchy is enforced and you're not actually embracing it. I don't know. I was grateful that my grandfather encouraged that. I mean, at a certain point, we certainly moved away from each other's... I don't want to say we moved away from each other's values, because...
Values and ideologies are different.
We got to the abortion debate, and like I definitely disagreed with him on that. But I in a lot of other ways, I did agree with him, and he certainly helped fashion my approach to questioning things, and I deeply appreciate that. In a lot of ways, I've said this before, and I know that he would be so mad to hear me say it, but he was the first feminist in my life. Like, my mom and my grandmother weren't as strong feminists as he was. Like, they, of course, embodied it in their own careers.
Right.
But in other ways, they didn't, and my grandfather did.
Yeah. And just to finish up...
We should get back to the graveyard soon, though.
We will. No, that's okay. Because of the way I think it's going to be contextualized, I was just trying to give a little bit of perspective. And so,
of course,
I came, and then I also, when I was a kid, went living in the South, kids just go to summer day camp, Bible day camp.
Absolutely.
I questioned too much, got asked not to come back to that. So my point being is I did not grow up, you know, I was not baptized as a baby. I did not grow up in the church. And so... A perfect heathen, yes. I don't...
Absolutely.
Anything
uncarved that, block heathen.
Anything that that is sort of my sort of feelings and philosophies and stuff don't come from church dogma. They come from sort of, you know... living and experiencing. So, you know, and I firmly hold on to this sort of idea of when people are trying to conceive of whatever you want to call God or nature or whatever, mm-hmm. is the old parable of three blind men describing an elephant, mm-hmm. is that you can't perceive of enough of it. So anytime, as soon as you put a name or anything on it, you're diminishing it because you can't conceive of it. In geometry, I remember having a discussion when the teacher asked, you did the thing where you drew the line with the two arrows on the edge, and said, put, I was like, and what point in this line is the middle, I think is what the teacher asked. And I said, any point you put the line is the middle, including if you put more than one, because if the line goes on infinitely, any place, if it's infinite and infinite on either side, no matter where you put the dot, it's the middle. They're all the middle. And the teacher was like, fuck, you're not wrong.
Right.
This is not that subject.
But that's several chapters away.
It's like what you just grabbed a hold of is not the concept that we're trying to teach the beginners right now. And so, and I'm not saying that I'm an advanced soul when it comes to spirituality. I just, so when I talk about things, that's where I'm coming from. And if you want to not necessarily go into your whole history, you grew up in more of a traditional Presbyterian household.
No, I didn't.
I thought you did.
I mean, in that I had my mom, who was very different, because we didn't go to church all the time, and she had very different ideas.
Okay.
I do have more of a traditional background than you do.
True.
In that my grandparents were very traditional churchgoers, which I think... I think people who didn't grow up that way probably have a more fundamentalist idea of what your average churchgoer is, because we see the extremes. We see the extremists in Congress.
Right.
We see the Bible thumpers, the Bible thumper extremists like banning books in school libraries and then school councils and doing horrendous things to suppress information around the country. But they are fundamentalists, the evangelicals, the extremists. And that's not really what your average churchgoer is.
Right.
I am no longer in that sort of sphere. But I know that what I really wish was those people who were not the extremists were louder,
right?
About not being extremists, you know. I think they're way more the average person than the people who want you to not have access to books.
Yeah, and you're right to touch on that, because what I meant, what my thought process was when I said more traditional, in the fact, I just meant the fact that you did go to church with your grandparents.
Sometimes I did. It was not all the time, but I do. My background is more like Deep South, Deep South educated intellectual churchgoer.
Right. Which
is way different. Like, it's not your Southern Baptist.
No.
It's not your, but it's not your Episcopalian either. Like, going to the Episcopal church as a kid, which I did for a year, I was like, oh, these are way more what my vibe is. I was really happy that my mom wanted to go to that church for a year, because I was like, okay, you're LGBTQ positive and you're, you know, you're about, you know, they were way closer to socialists than I was used to, like in the Methodist church, which was most of my family, in the Presbyterian church, which was my nuclear family. But the Episcopalian church was way more liberal, and I had my brain opened by that. I collected Bibles as a kid. Like, I collected stuff from garage sales.
that I would go to with my grandfather, and I would, you know, like, oh, here's a, you know, the Good News Bible, and like,
right.
at the all the hippie Bibles that you would find in garage sales because somebody had bought them 20 or 25 years before, and, you know, no longer believed that you could build a better world with Jesus values. I was like, oh, well, I'll pick that up. Okay. So I grew up with that sort of, like, weird, different values. I don't know. I paid attention to the things that people said and did and where they hit up against their sticking points, if that makes any sense. But what I'm saying is, like, you know, like, they would say, this is the gospel of Jesus, these are the Beatitudes, this is, you know, the story of Jesus overturning the moneylender tables, and here's, you know, here's, like, giving people a ride no matter what they look like, and, like, doing these good works. And here's where I'm going to balk and say something racist. And I would be like, that's an interesting sticking point. And, like, I would pay attention to the sticking points and where they conflicted with everything else, every other message, and learned a lot from that. My upbringing was not completely traditional.
Okay. And also,
without going into details.
Right. But I also appreciate the fact that... shorthand doesn't necessarily work in this case, because if someone has not grown up in Southern culture, I think Southern culture is a whole, the idea of what church is in Southern culture. If you're not, if you were not born in like I wasn't born there, but if you were not raised in like Arkansas, Louisiana, Mississippi,
Alabama,
maybe some parts of Florida,
but only the panhandle.
Yeah, but that particular region of how, yes, there are those that will use the Bible to constrain, but there are also people that are just quietly faithful and just quietly go around doing acts of God and stuff. And I guess what I was kind of shorthanding to is because of the way we grew up, that like by the time you and I started dating and stuff, you were able to like if somebody mentioned a story from the Bible or something, you would be able to tell me kind of what it was about.
as translator.
Yeah. And whereas if it wasn't mentioned in the Plague God spell, yeah, I didn't know.
But, though, don't discount that, because the play Godspell, like, is the Book of Matthew. And, like, that is an important thing to know. Like,
I know
I
a few Matthews,
liked,
and I know the Book of Matthew.
That's important. The Book of Matthew is a very important thing if you're trying to use that lens. Like, it's interesting. Okay, we were going to talk about graveyards.
Well, but this was just...
This is good. Like, all the Gospels have a different focus.
Right.
And I read the New Testament over and over again as a kid. I loved the New Testament. Not really as much past the Gospels. Like, I read, like, the works of Paul and stuff, but... sorry if you're listening and you love Paul. No, I'm really sorry. You shouldn't love Paul. But like, the Gospels, like, all have their different focus. Like, I liked Luke because it was like, here's the Christmas story and stuff. But anyway, but if you know the Book of Matthew, you know things like the Beatitudes. You know the juice of socialism right there with a Christian context. And it's beautiful. It's a beautiful thing, you know, to take care of the widows and orphans, you know?
Right.
You know that if somebody is extremely poor and gives two pennies, she's giving a hell of a lot more than any billionaire in the world. Like, that's an important that's important math. That's important math. And if somebody doesn't get that, you know, that's something that they have to sit in a quiet room and think about.
And then the billionaire gets to rot in hell where the dogs lick their open wounds.
The open pussy wounds, which is also just a very flavorful little detail.
But okay, so that was just because I think that to some extent, in order to discuss how we feel about graveyards, at least for me, you have to kind of discuss, like, the feelings. Like I'd said earlier, before we started recording, the rituals of death can kind of confound me. But again, partially for me, at least, is, again, I'm not coming to it from the sort of religious ceremony part of it.
Sure. I mean, it's completely divorced from that for me.
And I get that.
But I respect that. Yeah, it's the weird thing. It's like it. It's hard to explain. But that's what this is about, right? Like, if you didn't grow up in a religion, it's really hard to explain how its perfume is in every cell of your brain,
right?
And your day, how everything has a particular lens. If you didn't grow up in the South, some of those social rituals, which are not religious rituals, but are social rituals, inform your speech and your way of moving about the world and your comfort levels with different things. Those things are hard to explain to a stranger.
Right.
It's the same thing that Margaret Mead was doing when she went to Africa. Like, she had to learn that for her anthropological texts. But at the same time, learning it as an outsider is not the same as growing up in it. My level of comfort in a cemetery is based on feelings that are so elementary. Like, I was a very small child.
You're starting to speak quietly.
Oh, sorry. That's me. I was a very small child going to cemeteries with my grandparents, having picnics, doing rubbings with pieces of paper and, like, grease pencils that my grandfather had brought, you know, and taught me how to do. For me, a cemetery is a very old place that you go on a sunny, warm day, and you have grapes and apple juice, and you sit in the sunshine, and everything smells amazing. And you sit with people who are long, long gone, but still have company, you know? And I think that's a beautiful thing. I think it's a beautiful thing that people who don't know the people in cemeteries still read their names aloud. It's the most incredible thing to me that I had a grease pencil that my engineer grandfather had for however long, and a see-through piece of typewriter paper that I would rub across a gravestone from 1887 in some deep southern cemetery, you know, and it would have somebody's name on it that my grandfather would sound out to me because I couldn't read yet, sipping my Sprite. And it would, that person's name would be said aloud as it was said aloud thousands of times while they were alive. And that's great.
So you basically describe
a movie we won't say because it's because of the writer's strike.
Actually, I will have to ask you what film that is because I she just mouthed to me an animated film, wink wink.
Yeah.
An animated film that might be good hot with a little whipped cream on top. but spelled different.
Spelled different.
Like the drink, spelled different. Mm-hmm. That's from a book. what you described is you're describing in a way a spell.
It's incantation.
Yeah.
To say someone's name is an incantation. It's an evocation. No, it's an invocation.
You are far more learned in witchcraft than I.
To invoke somebody, to call forth.
Okay. Yeah,
it's an invocation.
To me, invocation,
which I think is
just
a friendly thing. I don't think of it as like, oh, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to make a bad joke. To me, invocation is what's when you're looking at a program for some like assembly or something that you have to go to.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you see invocation and you're like, oh, that's going to be a boring 20 minutes.
I always liked those parts.
Yeah.
I am boring.
You're not boring.
I know. I love ceremony.
You like ceremony.
I love ceremony.
I hate routine.
I cry at ceremonies. But that's it. Yeah. I guess I don't consider them routine. They're special occasions.
See, and I get that. But
yeah. But for you, it's
for
different.
Me, it's just that I'm like
Sagittarius.
Yeah. but for me, it's. I mean, I do hate. I hate some routine because, to be fair, like structure at work or something, I have no problem with that kind of routine. But something that where I feel like pomp and ceremony and that kind of stuff gets in the way of what you're there to do.
But for a specific event, like, you didn't get to go to your graduation, but if you had gone...
Carefully, you're not covering your mic.
Oh, sorry. If you had gone to your graduation, that pomp and ceremony, would it have been meaningful?
That's an interesting hypothetical, because, for people that are listening, I was very, very lucky. I had a theater job. That started the week before school got out. So I actually got permission from the school district to let me graduate a week early. So technically, the day I graduated high school was when I made my quote unquote professional. I was getting paid like $30 a week, but I got paid for acting, but that was my professional acting debut because we had a fundraiser.
It's funny, it didn't occur to me until this moment that I skipped my college graduation because we were in a play at the time.
Yeah.
And it was our closing night.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a college graduation. You can do it any time, actually. But
yeah.
I haven't.
but would it have meant anything to me? That's interesting. I don't know. I think education means more to me now. The little bits where I've gone back to college, with very few bits, but those little bits have meant more to me than the chunk involving, kindergarten through high school, just in the fact that...
that was mandatory.
It's mandatory, and it's at a time... You know, it's interesting because I don't think you need... You really, at the time you are forming like that, you need that basis of education... Mm-hmm. You really do need it, but you're not ready to, I mean, at that time, by the time you graduate, your entire life has been nothing but just having information thrown at you and thrown at you and thrown at you. And to some people, they thrive in it. And to others of us, we get tired of the structure. I got tired of the structure, like, 4 or 5 years into it. And you still have so much left. Elizabeth is nodding furiously.
Because I have, a 1 year of grad school and education in me. I know people are working on that.
Yeah, I know.
I know people are working on that. It's come a long way, but what they know needs to happen, and what researchers in education and development, human development, know has not caught up, is miles ahead of what they're allowed to do in school districts and stuff. The law and education departments everybody's doing their best. But I hope everybody's doing their best. But I know that we know what people need a lot more than people are able to get what they need.
Right. I mean,
if that makes any sense.
The first 6 years of my schooling also was weird because my parents moved around so much.
So that's uneven as hell.
So part of it,
California, really good. Deep South, not great.
Yeah, and you and I had a similar experience in the fact that you and I went to a more progressive school for a little while, and so it was.
Why I'm super smart.
It was, yes. But third grade, it was second grade into third grade. You and I were both screwed on third grade, or was it fourth grade?
I was screwed on third grade.
Yeah, it was the same grade for both of us. But I went to a school for second grade where I was allowed to go at my own pace, which means that by the time I graduated second grade, I had done second and third grade.
Yeah.
Now, also adding to that, my birthday was in December. So they, they wouldn't let me start school that first year. So I was already older than everybody else. And so, my parents petitioned the school to let me skip third grade and go to fourth. Mm. But then they were afraid that I would be younger. The whole reason they hold you back to begin with. Yeah. And that I wouldn't, I wouldn't become social and maybe bad a bit.
And honestly, I don't think that's true. I don't. I think that what ends up happening is somebody in authority has a, well, I know from my story that somebody in authority has a reaction to you and the way that you're social, and they disable you in your social development and your educational development all at the same time, because that's what happened to me. I know that's a narrow view, but I think that's what happens. I think that people need to just trust that if you were intellectually advanced like that, that you're gonna sort the social part out.
Yeah, and in my case also, what happened was I just went to school the next year and was bored stupid.
Boom.
And so then that's when it firmly became implanted in my brain, school equal boring. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing is because we moved around a lot, math was the big thing, is that you'd go to one school and they hadn't learned fractions yet. Mm. And then you'd move and
they're already on geometry.
And so it was a really uneven.
I'm so sorry. That's how you develop a phobia.
Well, my sort of math, it's not really a math phobia, but it's my math where I stop and I fear that distance. I always fear that I am behind everyone in math. And I know it started in the fact that I did not learn division in school.
I'm so sorry.
We moved someplace where they had already learned division, and they refused to basically go back and catch me up.
To accommodate you.
Yeah,
to accommodate a student.
In a more progressive society or whatever, I would have gotten a math tutor or something.
Absolutely.
The school district could have called in somebody to catch me up.
Where people are headed now.
And I could have been
now.
There pretty quick, but they just chose. I just
I'm
was
so
told,
sorry.
Suck it up, buttercup.
You can't just do that with division, which is something that is it's pretty scary to a lot of students.
So if I have to divide anything, I mean, even if it's like 2 into 4, I'm like, they're all going to laugh at me kind of thing.
I'm so sorry.
That's okay. Okay, but so...
Sorry. Graveyards.
So sometime in the like early 90s, I remember you and I taking a trip to New Orleans, and one thing that you said is you very much wanted to make sure on the last day we went to one of the above ground cemeteries.
I don't remember this.
And it was, you were absolutely fascinated by the fact that because of all the floods and the like expansion and contraction of heat over the centuries, that a lot of the like tombs had slightly opened doors.
To be clear, as a child, I went to those all the time.
I understand.
Yeah.
I did not.
Right. That's why I'm saying my level of comfort in cemeteries is way different than yours.
And so that was the first time that I had ever like gone through a leisurely stroll. And I, at that time, and this is part of why I went to all that religious talk, is I had not really given much thought about mortality at all, about what happens with bodies, what happens, you know, to the physical remains of when we stop. And I think that the monologue in the play Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead is absolutely brilliant, of where he's talking about how when you first get that concept of a coffin, you don't think of it as being dead in a box. You rather think of it as just being in a box.
Alive in a box, yeah.
And how that is something that is...
very upsetting.
Very upsetting. But again, as you had discussed, you lost people in your life way younger than I did.
Yep.
The first...
I was 8 years old.
Yeah,
No. The first person I lost in my life was my great-grandmother, and I was 5. And I have a whole essay I started on her a while ago, because that was revelatory. But I feel like I'm stopping you from your
had
a thing to say.
Are you just going to say my monologue?
I started to say that, but it wasn't a monologue. It was like, it was an idea.
No.
I'm 3 glasses in.
That's great. No, it's not that. No, it wasn't that. I was kind of tossing to you. That's what I was saying.
Oh, no. My great-grandmother was when I was 4 or 5. It was before my parents divorced. So it was 4. And she was the first person I knew, and I knew her, and I liked her, that died. And it was one of those... like, I will always respect my Aunt Ronnie for this. My Aunt Ronnie was the person who was my great-grandmother's caregiver. My great-grandmother and my Aunt Ronnie were maternal side of the family. Sorry, am I speaking too quietly?
A little, yeah.
Okay. As is my way.
I get it. It's also almost 11 o'clock at night. We're drinking wine. And
haven't had supper. But my great-grandmother passed. She was a very sweet woman. And my Aunt Ronnie was her caregiver. And everybody was like, don't let the child go near the coffin. And I have my perspective of what that, like, funeral home looked like, and I have no idea how accurate it is, because it's just a memory of when I was 4. But I do remember that nobody would let me go near. Like, my dad had me out in the hallway, like, outside of the whole room. Like, I couldn't even go in the room, and, like, my mom wouldn't let me in, and, like, my grandparents were convinced that it would be upsetting to me. It was like, don't let the child know the coffin. So, of course, in my mind, I was like, shit, she's fucked up. Like, I was like, oh my god, a dead body must be, like, spaghetti, you know? Like, I was like, this has to be the most upsetting. She's turned inside out. She's just rotting meat. Like, I couldn't conceive of it. But if nobody was letting me go look at my great-grandmother's remains, and they were using the term remains, like, this is some upsetting shit. Like, they wouldn't shield me from it if it wasn't the worst thing that ever happened.
Right.
My Aunt Ronnie was like, you're all fucking fools, and grabbed me away from them and took me to the side of the coffin. And I was immediately relieved, because I was like, oh, it just looks like my great-grandmother.
Right.
Oh, that's what death looks like. Okay. I mean, like, you know, I was 4. Like, now I know death can look like a closed coffin situation, closed casket situation. Like, it can easily be very upsetting. But by that point, somebody has put makeup on you.
Right.
Somebody has, like, if they make the decision for a closed casket, that's fine. But most of the time, like, that's unusual.
Right.
Most of the time, people just die. They sew your lips shut. They sew your eyes shut. They put some blush on you. They may do something funky with your hair, like they did with my mom. But they...
Which is actually the only dead body I've ever seen.
I've seen a lot of dead bodies, JJ.
Everyone that in my life has died on a different coast. I've never been there. I've swept in afterwards.
That's true. That's so glamorous of you. I feel like you should have the coat from 101 Dalmatians. You're Cruella de Vil.
Oh.
Going to the funeral is what happens.
that makes it sound a little bit more high fashion. It's I appreciate the humor of what you're saying. It's very strange to me.
It is.
Because... You know, well, with my father, it was a very different situation in the fact that, you know, he went in for surgery and died on the table.
And that was the worst.
It was the worst, but also the best.
Because it was fast?
It sucked, but yeah, my father died on anesthesia and just didn't come back. You know, whereas, you know, we watched, like, my mother or your mother... that takes a lot longer and is not nearly as peaceful. And I think that's the other thing, again, when you're talking about graveyards, is when it is something like that, where you are visiting someone that you have connection to, you, of course, have long memories. But, like, in the case of my father... The last memories I have of my father, he was a little, he was having some trouble. The injury that killed him was causing him a little bit of cognitive stuff.
Yeah.
But, I mean...
That injury was pretty severe and happened pretty early.
Yeah. But the conversation I had with him was very much in sync with the relationship we had, where, long story short, my dad, it's a long, much longer complicated story than this, but the final thing that happened is my father fell and, got a head injury. And then when they went to drain, the water from his skull, it caused him to have, from his brain cavity, it caused him to have a stroke and he died that way. But we knew that he was going for that surgery. I didn't know how bad it was going to be, and I mean, one of the last things I said to my father before he passed is you're lucky you have such a thick skull. Most people would be dead already. And I have no problem with it. I mean, even when I found out, like, the next day he was passed, I was like, that's fine. He laughed.
That's the humor.
I said something that made him laugh. Shared. And yeah, so it's fine.
Yeah, that's great.
You know, I've made a joke before. I have a leather coat of his that one of the last times I saw him, I tried it on. He had just bought it. I tried it on, and it fit me like a glove. And I was like, oh, I'll just take this. And my father said something along the lines of, over my dead body. And the next time I went back, he was passed. So I took it. So, you know. So, but I think that the horror that goes around the suffering of death in my head for a long time, not so much now, but for a long time, that is what I placed in graveyards because they are, they're the next step. You know, you live, you have a life, you're a functional human being, and then something horrible happens and they shove you in the ground.
Yeah. But you know what the next step actually is? People visit you. And the next step is dandelions grow where you are lying. The next step is people on a date walking past where you are and reading your name aloud. The next step is people carefully, volunteers carefully cleaning your grave. The next step is people marveling over the figure that somebody has put on your grave of a woman on a ski. Like, we saw all these things yesterday, my friend Mur and I. Like, the next step is social engagement. The next step is beautiful. It's whether you think that people are there or not. That's the next step with your body.
Right.
It may not be the next step with your spirit. I don't think it is. But with your body, with your memory, with your gravestone, like, your memory is vast. Your memory is people reading your name off your gravestone. It's people remembering you as long as they can until they all die out in stories like you just told, like right. I've told. That goes on as long as it goes on. You know, the next step is not horror. The next step is really pretty.
Yeah, I think where I am now, everything you just said is beautiful. I think kind of where my headspace is now, I wouldn't mind having all of that without having my remains there. A marker
with, and you can do that.
A marker with my name.
Yeah.
You know, and just sort of, again, to have people be able to go, oh, yeah.
Look at that.
Well,
and that's very public. It doesn't have to be public. Like, death can be in a jar. You can be in somebody's jar. You can be in that jar until they take you to the, like, legally appropriate place where they can deposit your ashes. Like, yeah. if that seems good to you.
Yeah.
Or you can be donated to science. I have all of the things on my driver's license that says, take whatever you can use. Yeah. Because I would rather be harvested for someone else's good use. I would rather somebody have my liver, barring all of the wine I have had this evening during this conversation, but, like, I would rather somebody have my eyes, my heart, my whatever they can use.
Yeah.
And then go on in that.
I have all that filled out, but as the last couple of years, I've had a couple of health issues. I'm like, you can take my eyes. Oh, I've got astigmatism and I don't see
good
very
luck.
Well.
But you've got other things, like, there's the retinas.
You can have, yeah, it's true. It's like you can have my kidneys, but by the way, diabetic.
You know what? You checked the box, and they'll be like, "Oh, bless his heart."
Yeah.
If you get some little Southerner, but
what I will say though is that the idea of what you were saying about the you know people saying your name and stuff, I did just have this like kind of funny idea of you know 500, 700 years from now, somebody doing you know rubbing of my name. And doing the same thing they've done to me my entire life. Wonder what the J's stand for.
Jason Joseph.
Yeah, but nobody will be there to say that. I don't know that I've ever said what the J's stand for on the show. You might have just had a...
Just big reveal.
Might have been a big reveal.
Massive reveal. I don't know.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
So I'm not... I'm not afraid of or disturbed by graveyards anymore. I do still think the preservation of bodies, it's that whole thing is still a very strange concept for me.
Yeah.
I understand it's for the living. I get that. But
we've been doing it at least since the Egyptian
era. Yeah. But
area. That too.
That true. That Egyptian area. But you know, having had the experience of knowing that both my folks were gone and not getting to see them,
yeah,
and having the experience of your mom passing, and then seeing the body, I'm not sure. For me, and I can't speak for anybody else. I can't say for me which one. Because they always say that the open casket viewing and stuff is for closure for the family, and I don't know which one gave me quote unquote closure.
I didn't need it for closure. Like my grandfather, I wasn't there for the funeral,
yeah,
and I didn't need it for closure. I would have preferred to have been there because preferred to have been there to see my grandfather off, just because I loved him.
Right. I would like to like hold my dad's hand. Or
absolutely.
Something. Or my mom. Either one.
Absolutely. You were on the wrong coast for it. I was on the wrong coast for it. But like, to have seen the bagpiper play for my grandfather's funeral, because right. He was Scottish to his fucking soul, like that would have meant the world to me. I still tear up just thinking that a bagpiper played at his funeral. Like, right. A volunteer showed up to play bagpipes for my grandfather's funeral. Fuck yes. And also to just know that, like, whatever form of consciousness he had after death, he was really giddy about that, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he was... happy for that.
The
would have been happy for that if that's the way it goes.
The part of me who is a fan of a certain space-going television series that became movies would love it if somebody played Amazing Grace on bagpipes after I died.
Yeah. But it doesn't mean that I don't have closure with my grandfather on that.
Right.
I had conversations with him on the phone. Like, I knew where he was at when he was leaving, and he told me he was good with going.
Yeah. And I think that
he
also...
He told me it was interesting to be at the end. And I told him, you're not at the end. And he was like, it's interesting. And I was like, okay, this dude is ready to go, and I'm not ready for him to go. But he was like 95. It was time
and
for him.
But I think that part of for me, what makes graveyards less scary is something similar to that, in the fact that I for a long time was weirded out by the idea of leaving behind a body. Just the concept of it, of the fact that the only thing that I have ever known, for real,
yeah, that's where all your senses are.
Yeah,
you're like right next to this Dracula poster, which I think is fucking amazing.
but just this idea that, you know, the only home I had ever had, whatever electrical impulses are mm-hmm. raising around my organs that give me the sort of internal monologue and just jukebox of songs that's going through my head at all any given time was going to sort of like just continue on when those electrical impulses are no longer moving around. However you want to phrase that. Mm-hmm. And so that was something that I used to get real weirded out by. Mm-hmm. You know, the kind of thing that wakes you up in a cold
that
sweat
makes sense.
At night.
Yeah.
And then not I don't this came before depression, so I don't want to say well, I can't say it happened before depression. This came before diagnosed depression.
Yeah.
There was just suddenly one day, I think this was after Dad died. It was before Mom died. Mm-hmm. I had started, I know I'd already read, like, the Tao of Pooh and Day of Piglet, which were seminal
foundational texts for your religious experience.
They just sort of the whole
philosophical
experience. Yeah. And but then there was one day that I it just sort of occurred to me that I am not trying to make a comment on the concept of an immortal soul or anything like that. I have none of those answers. It's part of why I have always, not always, but I have most of my adult life said that I am a diehard agnostic, in the fact that I would love nothing more than when I pass, to find out there's something absolutely amazing out there. Mm-hmm. But I don't necessarily need for it to be there.
Right.
If there,
best to make your amazing right now.
Yeah, and so, but that is part, is this idea of, I have things that I want to do. I have aspirations in my life. I have relationships that I would cling to, fingernails, with all the tenacity available to me, that I would absolutely not want to leave behind. Mm-hmm. But if something happened and, all those electrical impulses shut off,
you wouldn't have anything to say about it.
I'm not terrified of that concept anymore like I was. I think the great philosopher, Mr. Keanu Reeves, once said that, what did he think happens when you die? And he took a moment to think about it, and he says, I'm pretty sure that when you die, the people who love us will miss us.
Yeah.
And I think that's about as solid description kind of how I feel, in the fact that I'm not now, when it comes to this idea of me passing, mm-hmm. I don't I don't necessarily know, you know, what I want done with my flesh, but I'm not worried about what happens. Like you said, you have no say in it, and you don't really, know if you were. I personally, in some way, hope that the idea that, you know, when the traditional saying of, you know, I know they're with you kind of thing, I personally, at least, especially right after you pass, I don't know that I want that. Mm. I don't want to witness anyone that I loved being upset that I'm gone.
Oh, yeah.
I don't want to see that.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to know that I... And that is the one thing I think now that if anything upsets me about passing, it's this idea of I don't want to do that to the people. You know, I know how it has hurt me when those that I love in my life have left me, that I don't want to do that to anyone else. And that's the part of not existing anymore that I find upsetting.
Yeah. I don't know. I know you want to wrap this up, but like...
I mean, just because I figured we didn't want to do 3 hours on our first episode back where we
totally
talk about death.
It. Abso-fucking-lutely.
And eventually we should have a midnight
dinner.
We're
almost out of wine. But yeah, I don't know. You know, it's funny, and I'm sorry to bring this back to like a cat, but like... I don't dismiss that. That's a pure form of love.
Yeah, when I
like,
said those I love, I meant include... I am still... You know, we named cats that we had. I am still not over...
Biff.
I'm not over the loss of my beloved Biff. I'm not over the loss of Yoshimi.
Or Samantha. No. I'm not over any of them. Absolutely not. You shouldn't have to get over... Like, grief is not something that I think actually ends.
Yeah.
I think that they've done psychological studies that grief is just something that rears its head.
Do you want to try moving your mic up a
little
bit?
Sure. Grief is something that you just live with. You know, you lose somebody and you feel bad about it, and in various forms for the rest of your life. That's just the way it is. Ben, that's fine. That's just something that you as a human have to like develop a tolerance for.
Yeah.
But I have, you know, had very close relationships with people who have gone, and some of those people were animal people. And most recently it was Doc. And you know, Doc slept on my pillow every night. Doc followed me around. Doc was a fucking soulmate. Like,
Doc found you the most infinitely interesting human being on the planet.
Doc was a lovely person. Doc had a lot of insecurity in his younger years, and when he came to us, he like found somebody that was like, no, you live with us until you are gone, and he'd never had that before.
Yeah.
And so that was something new to him, and he really dug the fact that he wasn't going to get rehomed after us. And so he was my soulmate. Like, I loved that cat.
And I think there's also something to be said about the fact that he was not terribly healthy when we got him, but we helped him find health. And
oh my god,
Artemis just like walked over and is like now cuddling with Elizabeth because she could, I believe it's because she could tell you were upset. But
oh my god, the cat just licked me.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ, what a sweetheart. Cats are great. But Doc was just a fucking angel. And when, like, not to get too woo on your non-woo podcast, but
I'm a fairly woo human. Come on.
When you're a very concrete sort of woo human, though. But like
concrete woo. I very much believe in this woo.
No, it's not like that. It's more practical than that. But I took his body out to a stranger's car.
Yeah.
And put him in it. And when I came back in, you were here for it. I was like, shit, I can feel him everywhere.
Yeah.
I've never felt that before. I've had dreams of people who have passed, of course. I have no clue whether, because I've experienced a lot of death. But, like, I don't know whether that's my brain processing them dying or if that's a visitation. I have no idea.
I also don't know.
I have no clue.
I don't know that there's any
difference. It doesn't have to be.
Discernible difference from, yeah, from what your brain needs.
Sure, but I mean, like, whether it's actually, yeah, them visiting or not, I have no idea. But I know that. I know that when I came back in from the doctor's car, because we got him euthanized at home, and the vet took him away, and it was late at night. But I came back inside and hit the hallway in our apartment where he used to sit. And I felt completely enveloped by somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a personality signature. I have never felt that before. I was like, this is Doc, and he's everywhere.
Right.
And he was freshly dead. I've never felt that before.
Well, it's, and this is on that cusp, I guess, of concrete and woo, as you put it, of the fact that, you know, science tells us that we are, that the thing that makes our bodies function is the electrical impulses that we are able to fire through our neurons and through our different tissues and twitch muscles and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And science also tells us that energy can be transferred, but it cannot be destroyed. So,
right.
So no matter what you believe in, in spiritually, we are told that the energy that gives us our very consciousness and our very existence cannot be destroyed.
I hear you.
You know, whether it is, and this is kind of where I say, is it a difference? And I, yes, it is a difference, because there is a difference if there is a consciousness that visits you, that remembers they visited you and continued on and reincarnated or moved on to a different plane of existence, or I was about to mention a film that is a great examination of afterlife, and boy, this film, not talking about anything.
SAG after strike. Hey, can't producers, give them what they want.
Give them what they want. Meet their demands. I will just say, I will, in this case, I am not promoting a struck work. I will just say, feel free to explore the works of Albert Brooks. He's an actor, not a film. And
there you go.
And there's definitely a film in there that is a very interesting exploration of afterlife.
What could he possibly have done that was about the afterlife?
But maybe don't watch it until after the strikes are over, because I didn't recommend it.
Exactly. But then do watch it.
But so I don't necessarily think this idea is necessarily all that woo, because, I mean, well, first of all, there is the behavioral part of it, and the fact that I cannot stress the fact that for the 8 years Doc lived with us, if Elizabeth was in this house, Doc was at her side. It was like the drawings, like fantasy drawings of like a warrior woman and their wolf.
I was thinking it was kind of like the golden compass and
he was your demon.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is what it felt like when he died. I was like,
if nobody,
I don't know what to what I'm. God. Part of me is completely caught.
Yeah. If you haven't, if anyone here has not read the His Dark Materials books, Philip Pullman,
please do.
One of the conceits of the novel is that
children
in the world where that takes place, part of your soul manifests as a familiar. When you're a child, they mutate because you're not certain who you are, and then at a certain point, they become a portion of your soul, and it's interesting storytelling that you actually can tell kind of who someone is by the kind of animal that their familiar becomes, or their demon, as it's called in the book.
Yeah, sometimes it's a rabbit, sometimes it's a bear.
And you're right, he was. And so
he felt like it to me.
And so there's the behavioral loss where you're going to feel him because you always felt him there. It's the I hate to use this kind of analogy, but the phantom limb kind of thing, and the fact that you feel him even though he's not there. So there is certainly that. But there's also the fact that whatever was Doc was still in the space.
That night,
quite some time. I'm not convinced, not now.
No, listen, though. When we went, we left the next day because I was like, I can't be in the apartment.
Right.
And we left and we spent the night out at the coast in Oregon. And when we came back and I wanted to bring in our luggage, I flipped on the switch in the hallway and a light that had never worked while we were here turned on.
Yeah.
And it turned on over where I felt him in the apartment after he died, and where he used to sit to look into your room. He was there. The light's not on anymore. The light stopped working, but it was working for a few weeks there.
Yeah. When I...
and it hadn't been working.
I had neck
Speaking
surgery.
Speaking of electrical impulses.
Yeah. I had neck surgery about a year and a half ago, I guess it's been now.
Mm-hmm.
But I was bedridden for about a year, just so you know what Elizabeth's talking about in the hallway. Doc very much was Elizabeth's familiar. He was okay with me, but he would not approach.
I had to go to work sometime.
But he wouldn't approach me or anything. But one of the things he used to like to do is sit outside my bedroom door and stare at me.
Liked you.
I used to take. I'm not saying he didn't like me. I'm just saying he wasn't going to approach me. He wasn't going to curl up in bed with me or anything like that. And
because that would have been cheating on me.
The funny thing is, too, now, for some reason, if I'm in my room, Artemis stands in the exact same spot and stares at me the same way. Which, again, you're like, well, how do these behaviors get passed along? Because that is that's an unusual behavior.
Doc went, psst, psst, psst.
Yeah.
Oh, look, she woke up.
And that's how I take it. So, you know,
generations of cats.
Yeah, just sort of.
I don't know. What did Yoshimi tell Doc?
Don't trust anyone.
Fair.
Whereas I think that I for a long time thought of graveyards as this sort of monument of rotting.
Oh.
And so that's why... and I should also say that, like, the first person in my family that I was aware of that died, I had a David. Father's son, so half-brother.
David, yeah.
Yeah. He was my dad's from his first marriage. He was quite a bit older than me. I met him a little bit when I was very young. I didn't really know him that well, but again, he had that sort of older brother status, and so I always figured he was somebody that I would know eventually, like when I grew up enough to be interesting.
Yeah.
Like the mid 80s when the AIDS pandemic was being ignored by Reagan, fuck you, and that whole thing.
Seriously.
He had HIV. He lasted longer than.
He died in the mid 90s.
Yeah, he lasted a lot longer than some people. He died after I was out of high school. I know that. So he was the first person that I knew that passed. I was not particularly close to him, but to kind of give you an idea of how I like that fears and phobias, after he passed, I started having nightmares about this person that I didn't really know being stuck in a box and rotting and trying to get out. So that's when, you know, that's when I say like monuments to rotting or whatever. That's, to me, they felt like, rather, to me, it felt like the opposite of what they always tell you. It's like, it's a memorial, a celebration that someone was here. You know, we were saying that about birthdays. To me, birthdays are a celebration that somebody's there, but putting your body in the ground to slowly decompose with chemicals felt like the complete opposite of that.
The chemicals are the part I object to.
The chemicals are weird.
But I don't think they're there anymore. So it doesn't bother me as much. Does that make any sense?
But they still use formaldehyde and everything.
Bodies. Not the bodies. I mean, like, I don't think there's a person.
Oh, the person there anymore. No, no. Well, that's there. The thing is I have moved on in my feelings. That's part of why I talked about, like,
otherwise, you're dealing with, like, Kill Bill 2, where she's trying to get out of the grave. Otherwise, you're dealing with Kill Bill 2, where she's trying to get out of the grave with her fingers.
Yeah.
Like, no, I don't think that is it. So much.
No, I agree with you. I don't have that.
But,
I mean,
you know, that's just me.
And this is, I mean, this whole podcast has sort of been a long way of the fact that I never answered the question you asked me of would I be willing to go for a walk in a graveyard with you on your birthday? And yes, of course I will. But because I don't have, I've never been to that graveyard.
It's
and even
beautiful.
If we don't do it on your birthday, I'm willing to do it. Yeah, you know, sometime in the future, because
it's
it is
really
something
beautiful.
That you find really beautiful that I'm not familiar with.
I have went. I'm from Mississippi. Forgive me. I have gone now with my friend Ev, who's a death doula, and she has her birthday picnics there every year.
What does the term death doula mean?
Basically, like a birth doula helps you through the process.
Okay, I don't know the term doula.
Oh, shoot. If you read Alan Moore's Jerusalem, women...
Yeah, that's not going to happen.
Yeah, no, it's a very long book, but it's very good. But there are women who used to do both. They helped birth the babies, and they helped you through the death process.
Okay.
But Ev is in training to be a death doula, and that's...
I didn't know that.
That's her thing.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Rock on,
and
Ev.
She loves... Right? And she loves... She loves Lone Fir, but I went with Myrrh. Walking through is a beautiful experience. My friends Leanna and Caroline volunteer to clean gravestones and share the pictures of their progress with different gravestones.
Side note, is Myrrh's music on Spotify?
Yes, absolutely.
Myrrh Larson on Spotify. Check it out.
Myrrh Larson on Spotify. Absolutely. And Bandcamp, wherever you're comfortable.
On Bandcamp, you can buy stuff, and they pay more than Spotify.
Yes, absolutely. You can also find them on TeePublic.
Myrrh Larson.
Larson.
As in Gary Larson, like the Far Side?
M-Y-R-R-H, and then Larson, L-A-R-S-E-N.
So not like not like Gary Larson with an E.
But yes, good stuff. And they, we walked through and we wiped some leaves and moss off of people's gravestones and admired them.
Yeah, because
It's good.
I there are certain, even when I'm like, even back when I was more weirded out by graveyards and stuff, mm-hmm, I mm-hmm. still like something like Arlington Cemetery. It's, you know, I am someone who has not the right wing false idea of what patriotism and God right. and country and all that is.
Right.
Because that's all a twisted, incorrect, idiotic path.
Weirdness.
But I do sort of, I you know, my whole life's been in this country, except for a couple of days in Canada and a week in Wales. And so, you know, although we are a young country with a young history, still, when you look and you see markers of people who fell in battle and people who
Vicksburg.
I have been to the
been to Vicksburg many times.
Yeah, what is that park? It's the,
I thought it was Vicksburg. I don't remember. I haven't been since I was a child, but I've been many times.
So there's a huge park in Vicksburg that is it's a Civil War memorial, but it's not, again,
it's not like a Confederate glory hole.
No, it's the Battle of Vicksburg was a,
it's like people fucking died here.
Yeah, it's the Union Army tried to starve out Gettysburg. They surrounded it, not Gettysburg, Vicksburg. Mm-hmm. They surrounded it and weren't letting supplies through, and it was a horrible, horrible, bloody battle. But that battlefield has been turned into a huge park. The thing that I remember about it is you'll sometimes catch people out there with their metal detector getting bullets. When I was there and I was a kid.
Holy shit, really?
Oh, yeah, when I was there when I was a kid. I don't have them anymore. But when I was a kid, this, like, person who had a, like, bag of bullets gave me two bullets.
Do you have, like, little round bullets?
No, they're not round. They were, like, bullet-shaped. They didn't have the casings, but they had the like, pointed tip, like...
Wow.
They told me the difference between the Confederate bullets and the Union bullets. The Vicksburg National Military Park. Thank you. The Confederate bullets were smooth, whereas the Union bullets had two grooves. And just because the presses, the Confederate bullets, you know, they had cheap presses, whereas the Union bullets had more money.
Yeah.
Which is why the difference between the gray and the blue uniforms.
Yeah, I went to this place a million times.
Yeah.
It was established in 1899. But I went to this building specifically.
Oh, weird. My Union.
Many, 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 many times.
It's changed, but yeah, I saw the building. My Union is 4 years younger.
Sorry, it goes back.
No, it was 4 years older, excuse me, than that park.
Yeah.
My Union was formed in 1893, 94, yeah. I don't remember now. I looked at it.
I thought you said 94.
Yeah, 94, which is why I said 5 years, but then I screwed up when I talked. I was trying to talk fast and go past
it. It's almost midnight. Whatever.
It's almost midnight, so we should wrap this up.
Yeah, I don't think we talked about graveyards enough, but maybe that's a Neil Gaiman fan in me. I don't know. Some other time. We talked about religion too much.
Well, I felt like...
But you gotta lay a foundation.
I thought so. I really felt like if we just got into it without...
Jumped into it.
You know, but yeah, maybe we did meander a bit at the beginning, but there's always next episode where we come back to it and we're like, we're still not talking about movies, folks, so we're going back to graveyards.
Going back to the graveyard.
Anyway,
go to Lone Fir Cemetery. If you're in Portland, Oregon, it's beautiful. It's ancient for the West Coast.
But do you... Yeah. Do you have... I realize, like you said, we maybe jumped over what we were originally going to talk about, but did you have any thought, because I didn't mean to control this as much as I feel like I did.
No, that's your podcast for one thing.
It's a shared podcast. If it's not, it's nothing if I don't have somebody to talk to. So, no, don't.
Did I have anything to say?
But did you have anything I feel like you told us what pulled you there.
What pulled me there this time was that a friend was like, hey, let's go for a walk in the cemetery. And when two goths are like, hey, let's go to a cemetery. I don't think people understand how sunshiny goths are.
Yeah.
But that's the thing, is like, we look at the things that like, you're like, oh, that's death and rot. And we're like, oh, let's go have a picnic.
I don't know about everywhere in the country, but I do know here in Portland, it's the goths and the gays that are keeping the tickets moving on a certain pink-themed film.
Oh, fuck yes. Fuck yes. Absolutely.
The amount of goths, the amount of, like, silk or lace parasols
We're
that
not
I have
interested
seen
in the,
outside the movie theaters.
The bomb guy, that's fine, I suppose. No, we're more interested in the... Yeah, you know.
Yeah. But, yeah, but I mean, you talked about the beauty there, and you talked about...
It's beautiful. It's tranquil. It's not... Like, that's the thing. They and I talked about it being a little different than places like Arlington, where it's, you know, uniform and made to sort of move you along in the process.
Right.
But it's more like stop and chat a while and linger. And the trees are gorgeous. There's more than one fir.
What?
I know. We talked about that too. But it's
the lone gunman all over again.
But it's really pretty. It's not like Hollywood Forever or any of those where it's like there's some stuff in like Beaverton, Oregon, where it's fairly brutal and fairly uniform. You know, it's mausoleum style. But you go to Lone Fir and it's different age groups, different, like you find gravestones in Italian, you find gravestones in Russian, those are very new, and you find gravestones with people's portraits on them, you find gravestones of children, you find gravestones of teenagers from 2022, you find gravestones from, you know, 1830. You find gravestones. From so many different cultures.
Right.
But you also have the area up at the front that there's like, that's very interesting, where they've got a bunch of Chinese immigrants that they've got fenced off because they don't want people messing with it. And it's kind of under construction because they need to figure out what to do with it that will honor that area, because a bunch of people got put there without markers. And that's kind of gross. It's weird because everywhere you walk on Earth is a grave. Like, everywhere you are on Earth is a grave. And everywhere you are standing on top of your ancestors. Every single place. What does honoring them look like? Like, does it look like preserving the bodies? Does it look like embalming them and keeping them forever? Or does it look like honoring them by moving forward?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. One last thing, and we'll wrap up.
Sorry.
No. I'm curious. So there's a place in Mississippi.
Yes.
I think there's a... I don't remember if it's a crafts fair that's there every year. It is a crafts fair, and you know exactly
what I'm talking about.
You're
talking about the Chapel of the Cross,
So, okay, so Chapel of the Cross...
I talked about that with Mark.
Is, yeah, I know. It's part of what made me remember.
All right.
Merle Larson. Listen to their stuff.
Listen to their stuff.
But Chapel of the Cross, if I remember correctly, it's a little chapel with a graveyard.
Gluckstadt.
Oh, it's in Gluckstadt?
Yeah. I thought it was in Gluckstadt.
It might be. I don't remember. Again.
I think so.
But it's a little church. And if I remember correctly, it's a graveyard behind it.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, to the side, kind of. But
oh yeah. So, do you have a preference of, like, if you were going to go look at a graveyard, would you prefer to go something a little bit more sprawling, like a lone pine, or a lone fir? Excuse me. Or would you prefer to go to something like Chapel of the Cross, where I don't think they buried anybody in that graveyard for a long time?
They haven't for a long time. I don't have a preference between the two, because the Lone Fir Cemetery, it is a living cemetery. That's weird to say, but like it's a continuously evolving cemetery. The Chapel of the Cross is enshrined in history. It's some place that like has a churchyard that was relevant for a time. I still think it's relevant though. Like it's got names in it. It's relevant.
Yeah, I'm not saying anything about its relevancy. I'm just saying that I'm speaking just for me. Like the 2022 tombstone for a teenager is going to make me feel more like connected and angry about COVID and all of that shit than if I were to see a teenager who lived from, you know, 1700 to 1717. You know, I don't have a political or any sort of real... I don't have as much of a connection
Well,
to
I'm
it.
Not a teenager, but I have a connection to all of those things.
That's fair.
That's an art history major. Like, I don't know. Like, if you put me in front of World War I, I'm going to be deeply upset. If you put me in front of, like... It's all the same thing that keeps repeating, right?
Yeah.
All the same atrocities.
Okay. Okay. I
Does
see what
that
you're
make
saying.
Any
yeah.
sense? Okay.
Okay. Yeah.
Sorry.
No. And on that note, I know that I am very hungry and I'm going to start running out of energy. So I am going to say, everybody, thank
it's
you
in
for
Madison.
Listening. It's in Madison?
Mm-hmm. I thought it was in Gluckstadt because it was just outside of Madison. But it's Madison.
Okay.
It's an Episcopalian church. Of course it is.
Well, Madison is a suburb. Well, actually, both of them are suburbs of Jackson. Madison is slightly... I'd say it's more of an upscale. Whereas Gluckstadt, for anybody who cares, it's where there was a Levi's factory there for a long time. That was all that was there. But then they moved... what are the name of those cookies? Pirouettes?
Pirouettes, like the spin you do in ballet.
Those used to be made in Germany, but then they moved the pirouette factory from Germany to Gluckstadt, Mississippi, and now those are made in Mississippi. So I find that kind of fun. But on that note, okay, so the plan is right now, I am going to try to bring us back more. I have been talking to. For the last 6 months or so, I've been talking to people about, you know, having more of a rotating sort of. I don't want to say rotating. I still only have a couple people I can lean on to be my guests, but I'm trying not to milk any of them too hard because we all have schedules. But anyway, we're back, and if you let me know how you feel about if I mean this might have been a weird dark conversation to bring it back, but but I'm a weird dark guy. So if you have any thoughts about your feelings on death and the preservation of bodies in graveyards and whether or not they creep you out or whether or not you should whistle while you walk past one, let me know. MarsNeeds@gmail.com. I'm going to go ahead and put this out there. I haven't done it yet, but I might have a new project. I'm not going to call it a project. I'm going to call it an experiment. I might have a new experiment that I'm going to play with soon. I don't know where it's going to go or how long it's going to last, but it's an idea. So, as for now, thank you everybody for being here and listening. From me, I say good night, and from you,
good night.
I haven't said this in forever. It almost feels foreign to say at this point, but yoinks away.